Welcome to Bodcast, the Business of Dentistry podcast, brought to you by Practice Plan. Bodcast delivers the best business advice, real-life stories, and practical hints and tips to make your practice a more profitable and sustainable business. And now, here's your host.
Edition of Bodcast, where I'm joined by Tony Kilcoyne, and we're going to be exploring the latest results and just the general views and feelings around NHS dentistry, both currently and in the future. Welcome, Tony. I wonder if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself for, I guess, a very small minority of people that may not know you.
Yeah, I'm Tony Kilcoyne. I've been in dentistry over 30 years. I work mainly in my own practice, which actually started as an NHS squat practice, gradually became a mixed practice. As I became more specialist and qualified, I now take referrals for crowns, bridges, implants, and I do routine dentistry as well, of course, but I'm now totally private, and I'm a specialist in prosthodontics. My other activities in dentistry, because I am sad, I do love dentistry, is I also run a TPD training scheme for foundation dentists. I was recently elected to the BDA PEC Executive Committee, where I'm helping the BDA develop strategy and look at the future needs of dentistry. And I'm really pleased to be chatting to you today, purely just giving my own opinion and experiences and where I just think people need to be looking for themselves, where dentistry is going and how they can contribute to it in what are challenging circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those challenging circumstances came through loud and clear in the results of the survey, where for the first time we did a comparison between the views of NHS dentists on the current situation and the views of dentists that had left the NHS and gone private, looking back on their time in the NHS. And there was a very big contrast in their attitude towards a number of things. So one of the things that I was particularly struck by is the vast majority of NHS dentists are feeling unhappy with the level of care they're able to provide under the NHS. Now, for me, that was quite an interesting point, because that's generally something they're fairly reluctant to admit to. And yet here we had 80-90% saying that they were worried about the level of care that they're providing. What was your take on that?
Indeed, I think there's been actually a growing frustration for a number of years. You know, it hasn't just suddenly happened this year, where there's pressures on time, there's pressures on the number of patients who need quite a lot of care, and also everything from the cost, the bureaucracy, the regulations, the risks in dentistry have all increased disproportionately. And I think dentists do struggle with, as a professional person, they have to treat everyone equally and to the best of their abilities. But when they're stuck in a system that has limitations, and when they're working in adversarial circumstances, that, basically, if they put a slight foot wrong, they get hit with a sledgehammer now, rather than any help or support, then that massively increases stress, unhappiness, and disenchantment. And inevitably, that will have a knock-on effect in patient care. And I think it's actually very brave of these people, even if it's anonymous in a survey, to actually admit, it's a really difficult thing to personally admit, you know what, I might not actually be doing my best for everyone. And as a caring professional person, that really hits your heart, because you do care. But to have to admit that, I think, takes a lot of courage. And I'm, in a way, glad that it's come out in the survey, because it is important, if that's what's happening, to recognise it and start doing something about it, because this is not good for the public, for patients, or our profession.
Absolutely. Now, one of the things that I've seen over the years, to be honest, is dentists prioritising care above, quite often, their personal financial rewards, almost always over their work-life balance and their social lives. And both of those things came out in the survey as being under an awful lot of pressure. But then in addition now, to see that it's almost as if dentists have maxed out on what they can compromise on with their remuneration, what they can compromise on with their work-life balance, and the only thing left to suffer is care. And as you said, that must be difficult to deal with.
Very difficult. And of course, that doesn't mean that sort of, patients are somehow being terribly harmed or whatever. But dentists like to do their best. They will sit and fiddle with a filling or something they're creating and making to try and make it look as good as possible and be as good as possible. You know, there's a lot of professional and personal satisfaction doing that. I think those extra things have been lost. And I think instead of actually doing their best that they're capable of doing, it's a subtle change. They're doing their best in the time or circumstance limitations that they can, because that's all they can humanly do. And I think it has got so bad now that no amount of goodwill, good intentions can compensate for various systems and pressures now that simply make compromises on probably now a daily basis. Because for it to show up in this survey, you know, I think if dentists had I've got a slight problem once a month, I don't think they'd even mention it in your survey. For them to actually be honest and say, look, this is affecting me, it's stressing me out, and I've got nothing more to give. I'm giving everything and 10%. And as you say, in their personal life, work balance, their personal stress, their health, the profession is suffering more than it ever has before.
That's certainly been my view, and it's 27 odd years that I've been working with the profession, and that pressure just seems to have built and built and built. And you mentioned about the risks and the adversarial nature of things at the moment. And one of the other things that came out of the survey was that, again, vast majority, 90 or so percent of NHS dentists don't feel happy about their ability to manage patient expectations. And this, in this litigious world, that must put a huge pressure on them, because they must feel like they're permanently exposed if they can't adequately communicate, build relationships, build rapport with patients.
Yeah, I think there's two aspects to that. Public expectations and awareness through national media, through Googling things now. It's getting more and more common that patients come in and say, oh, I've seen this on the internet. And they have relatively high expectations, which unfortunately is compounded certainly by the government system, where they still say NHS is free, it's the best, it's available to everyone, and there's no reason why you shouldn't have it. And I almost feel, and do they then go back to their office and give a little chuckle feeling, I still can't believe the public will take that in as being the complete truth. Because for ages now, we know the system has just not been able, on the NHS, to provide everything that everybody needs. It's doing its best, again, in a limited budget. But I think it needs to be more honest about that publicly, because then the public would have more realistic expectations from the system. But once they've been fed the line, everything you need's been available, and if it isn't, you should complain, or you should do this, or you should do that. It just then puts dentists, their teams, their staff on the front lines under incredible pressure to actually deliver something that is now undeliverable.
I think this is a really interesting area. So you mentioned earlier on about the distinction between practicing to the best of your abilities and the best of your abilities under the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really interesting area, because we're almost starting to delve into the possibility of there being different levels of standards to which people are expected to achieve, and almost you pay your money, you take your choice from a patient point of view. So to your point about the big lie, actually, until we've got that honesty and transparency, how can people make informed choices?
I found it really interesting, because one of my kind of past posts as well is I used to be on the GDC for 10 years, full council member on the GDC, elected once, and then when they got rid of elections centrally, because God forbid dentists choose someone who might understand them, they then went to an appointment system, but still got appointed because I met all the criteria. Well, even on the GDC, they're kind of, there's one standard of best practice, and we hear terms like gold standard and, you know, well, is there a platinum standard, or is there a silver standard, or is there a bronze standard? Even in the Olympics, you can be a gold medalist, a silver medalist, a bronze medalist. Actually, just even qualifying for it is an achievement. It is a standard that is recognised, and you can have different standards that are still compatible with health, with care, and so on. I think the thing is to be honest up front and know what that is when you get into it. So You know, if I want to, I don't know, sign up for some holiday insurance and it's their bronze package, it doesn't mean, oh, it's completely worthless. It'll just say, well, it'll help you up to this level or that level or this level. But it's got certain limitations. Or you want better? Well, then we have a silver package. And that might cost more, yeah, in money, but, you know, in dental terms, that might be time, resources or different plans, whatever it is. And then you've got gold. Now, not everybody needs gold all the time, let's be honest. We have a certain sector of the population who only visit us occasionally. They just want the toothache sorted, the tooth taken out, and they're only ever going to be occasional distress purchasers, if you like. They've no interest in prevention, continuing care, and so on. At the other extreme, you'll have families who, from that child being born, they want them to get into adulthood with not one bit of decay in their mouths. That's their gift to them, total health. And yes, all the studies show that will help set them up socioeconomically, successfully in life. But that will, you know, require a different approach. So there's nothing wrong with having different standards and different approaches. I think we have to get away from this idea of there's only a right, one right way, or everything's wrong. And the truth is, there's a spectrum out there. Now, we are going to have to grapple with this and be fully open and transparent about it and what that means. And interestingly, even dental faculty now who write standards for dental professionals follow a general ABC kind of plan. And A is, you know, the aspirational, the ideal. Wouldn't this be great if everything was perfect? You had unlimited resources, unlimited time, unlimited patient cooperation and wanting the best. And then right down to C where, well, basically, yes, there is some conditional or compromise involved. Maybe the patient doesn't want to save the tooth and they want it extracted, even though the dentist cares probably more about the tooth than the patient does. You have to accept that's reality. And then, you know, you have the middle standard, which is sort of, again, making the best of those circumstances. So it is not unprofessional or unreasonable to have different levels of care. Obviously, there's a lower level below which nobody should go, and that is do no harm.
And would your sense, because I think this is another interesting point that came out of the survey, was that the vast, vast majority of respondents, both those that were currently in the NHS and had previously been in the NHS, felt it was very difficult to achieve GDC standards within the NHS framework as it stands. So are we sort of looking at the potential for the GDC then rethinking? I mean, it feels there's a slightly more pragmatic tone emerging from some of the...
Yeah, I mean, the GDC's role is not to kind of set those standards, so maybe it's up to the rest of the profession to kind of drive that and actually grasp this nettle and do something about it. The GDC are there to look at, well, what's the lowest acceptable standards? And was it so lower than that that it would be regarded as deplorable? But the fact that the GDC are even saying, look, this is a possibility here, because in real life, we know when people come up before FTPs, we have expert witness testimony. The truth is, there is a variety of standards, and in many ways, they're acceptable in different circumstances. So instead of it being random and always needing experts to help us define what that might be in an individual's case, why don't we actually do something proactive and actually produce these? The faculty have been very good at that. I think the BDA have a massive role in that. And actually, this is for the greater public good, because if everyone expects gold standard, but they're not resourced in terms of time, money, environment, patient education to then deliver that, that will cause ultimate frustration and actually failure of the system. Nobody wants to see these things fail. They have to succeed and work in the public interest.
So I was struck when you said then about, or earlier on about the, you know, you can still remain professional even though there are different standards. And that
yes.
was, again, something else that came out of the survey was that actually, as the standards are currently laid down by the GDC, people don't think they can remain professional within the NHS. And does that then just require a change in the definition of professionalism? Or
well, actually, people get confused with, oh, what's professionalism? It's very simple, actually. Professionalism is the group of patients that you look after, you put them first. Not to be confused with, well, if one patient demands to be seen and you've got to delay everybody else's care, and actually cause them disadvantage because you have to put my individual interests first. No, that's not what it means. It means look at all the group of patients you look after in your practice, clinic, hospital, wherever, and do what's best for them overall. And so that will inevitably mean looking at their broad needs and having, I don't know, an appointment system, an emergency system, and a prevention system that best meets that particular group's overall autonomous needs. But yes, there might be one or two within that where it's not ideal for them. But for that one person to go and complain to the GDC then or whatever, is not, you know, necessarily either valid to say, well, that wasn't a particular gold standard that was met for me. Because it might have to be, well, I'm sorry, we have to have some waiting times, and I'm sorry I can't fit you in as an emergency today because I'd have to disadvantage seven other people. So we have to look at what's best for the whole. So is there some, would you call it compromise? Would you call it adaption? I'd call it optimizing the care, actually, which is not the same as the highest possible standard. It's making the best for everyone. And that includes the dentist, the hygienist, the therapist, the nurses, receptionist, the management, everyone involved in that team effort.
So, and I completely get what you're saying. I think this is a really interesting area, and actually it might be the only way of keeping the NHS alive, looking at the pressure that so many NHS dentists are feeling at the moment, that one of the options, and a large number of them said they would retire, they might leave the profession. And I think BDA's own research has supported the fact that there's a lot that are considering leaving the NHS by going private or whatever. Do you think that this more pragmatic view of standards and balancing with the GDC could help keep the NHS side?
I don't think it's just a nice idea. I think it's essential. Again, you come back to basics. The NHS system is limited. It can't resource everything for everyone at the best standards. Once one makes that diagnosis, one can then make the treatment plan of, well, here's several options then that we can do that makes it viable. And, you know, I'm a totally private dentist, and I find myself in a very strange situation of campaigning for the NHS more and more. None of us want to see it die and wither, because it does have a role. It's a very important safety net. But for dental care, you have to accept, a bit like the transport system, there's buses, there's taxis, and there's private cars. And some people will be totally private with their cars. Some will be totally public service orientated and take the bus. Some will mix and have occasional taxis. We shouldn't take any of those choices away, but we still want a bus system that works well and is safe. And if we have to limit the frequency of that but make it better, so be it. But yes, it won't be quite the same standard as a taxi taking you door to door sometimes, or after hours, or whenever. And it won't be the same as you being totally private with your own car. But if you were transport minister, you'd say, for the good of society, all these three things have to work well and together. It's not NHS versus private or hospital. It's NHS and private and hospital and charities. You know, we're seeing more and more charity work in this country, which was unheard of, because the NHS system cannot cope. So let's just get over this barrier of being stuck in denial that there's some big problems, and let's start coming up with solutions, because losing good professionals or ending their careers really stressed, unhappy, is not good for the public either, or the future of our profession. Our young dentists are coming into this system, and what's our legacy going to be? Going to leave them in an overstressed, over-bureaucratized, or whatever the word is, over-aggressive system that's going to harm them before they may even finish their careers, in their health or in their mental state or through the care they can deliver? This cannot be allowed to happen. We have a duty together to admit those problems and start putting in solutions.
So you touched on something really interesting to me there, which is the sort of younger dentists coming into the profession, and actually, really, I guess you're touching on how attractive is the profession for anyone. And one of the results of the survey suggested that I think it was 70% of NHS dentists wouldn't recommend dentistry as a career, and even 50% of private dentists who were actually very happy with their day-to-day life, but they actually, 50% wouldn't recommend dentistry. So what's your take on that?
It's so sad, isn't it, to hear that. I personally, myself, live, eat, breathe dentistry. Ask my wife. She feels she's a dentist by default because you hear so much about it. She puts up with all my activities and campaigning. But I totally understand that. I mean, if I was saying to my children today, and they've seen what dentistry is like, and they've seen what I can do and how happy I run the practice, I don't see them being as happy as I am today, where I've kind of tried to create my own destiny by being in dentistry. You know, statistically, they might end up being so, but statistically now, the odds are against them having a happy and long career in dentistry, because there's so many external things that are big negatives. It isn't just the NHS limited dental system that isn't properly focused on patients anymore. It isn't just the GDC and over-regulation. It isn't just that people are now suing and complaining at the slightest thing and dentists seem to be the highest target. It isn't just that dentistry is like doing microsurgery on teeth and takes a lot of concentration, effort, skills, and academic training. It's that when you put all those together, it sucks the humanity out of you and leaves very little behind. And nobody should be going home night after night feeling stressed, worried, too tired to do anything else, and thinking of an alternative career. The number of dentists I come across that are looking for something else is frightening. It is frightening. And we're now even hearing that some of the corporates are struggling to get dentists into their practices. They're trying to recruit further and further and further abroad. And I do wonder, are they saying to those people, yeah, the trouble we're having trouble recruiting is because the working conditions, the stress, and the adversarial nature of the UK is so bad now that combined, dentistry is not the happy, flourishing career it used to be.
Yeah, I agree with you about how sad that is, because we're fortunate to work with a number of practices who are largely private, flourishing, very successful, very happy. They have the time they need to spend building relationships with patients. Yes, they're anxious about the risk of complaints and litigation, but it's significantly less than working in the pressure of the NHS system. And they're at the risk of sounding slightly over the top. They are changing lives every single day. They are salvaging careers. They are changing social lives, personal lives of people. It's amazing the impact that dentistry can have. So that's incredibly rewarding. So this gap that seems to exist between how do you kind of maneuver your way to that situation when you're just starting out in your career, right? It feels like that's something we've got to address.
Yes. I don't want to sound all doom and gloom. It's just that dentistry is actually a very personal, caring profession. It's a person business, if you like. There's the business element, which has its own stresses, but there's the personal care as well. And I think dentists do put their heart and souls into their work. It isn't just carpentry. We're not just making the same round hole in a piece of wood every day in different pieces of wood. We are changing lives. We're getting people out of pain. We're making them feel happier. We're making them feel a lot more self-confident. Survey after survey, psychologically, sometimes the dental chair becomes like a psychologist's couch, and people tell you their life problems and all the rest. And I find that very humbling, actually. So, you know, we produce so much positivity for society. And again, we're just terribly poor at promoting that. So we've got some significant problems to address. But also, I think we need to shout a lot more about what we contribute to society holistically, as well as just dentally.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Tony. I think that's a really positive note on which to end our conversation. Really appreciate your time today.
You're welcome.
Fascinating talking to you. Thank you very much.